Welcome to Total Network Operations, the podcast dedicated to hardworking network operators like you who deliver all the packets, all the time, over the wires, and in the air. This show exists to talk about ideas and issues in NetOps so you can take away useful info and make informed decisions for your network and your team. I'm your host, Scott Robon. Today, we're joined by Bob Friday, CTO and co-founder of Mist Systems, and Juniper Network's Chief AI Officer and Enterprise CTO. Bob has seen a lot in wireless and drove early adoption of AI and ML in networking, and he has product and market experience that has built his confidence in AI at the core of networking products and solutions. We're going to dive in on that confidence in AI for NetOps on today's show. I can't wait to hear what Bob has to say about what's happening in the industry from his perspective and where it's going with AI tooling and operations. So Bob, great pleasure to have you here on TNOps today. Tell us a little bit more about yourself, what you do, and the things that are important to you from an AI and NetOps perspective.
Well, Scott, thank you for having me. This topic dear to my heart. And you know, as I tell people, you know, when I started my career 40 years ago as a wireless engineer, if you had bet a dollar I'd ended as a chief AI officer, you guys all be millionaires. So yeah, you know, started the career back, you know, 80s, they're doing wireless mesh networks at Metricom Ricochet. You know, my personal journey into AI really started at Cisco. You know, I basically sold Airspace. For those who remember Airspace, sold that to Cisco. That was a controller company. And I was talking to some very large customers out at Cisco, and I was trying to convince them to put this, you know, cut mobile experiencing on their retail app, right? These are retail customers. And they basically told me, and they said, Bob, we're not going to put anything critical onto my wireless network, you know, until you can stop your controllers from crashing. They wanted to make sure that I could deliver code more than once or twice a year. But more importantly, they told me I had to make sure that user was going to have a great experience no matter what. And that was kind of the beginnings of that paradigm shift, right? You still have to keep AP switches and routers up and running. But more importantly, it became this client to cloud story. And that was kind of the beginnings of cloud AI. You know, we had just done the Meraki acquisition. So we knew cloud was going to be important. But the real part was really real-time AI operations. That was the other architectural bet. You know, when we start Mist.
Got it. And so it's been how long now since Mist has been part of Juniper Networks?
We sold Mist, joined Juniper in 2019, started Mist in 2014.
Hard to believe. So 6 years, coming up on 6 years since, you know, integration into Juniper, and then over 10 years since the founding of Mist. So
yeah,
double digits. Yeah. Well, you know, look, I've had some recent experiences in the last year. It's gotten me more involved with the Wi-Fi community here in the Washington, D.C. area. There's a Wi-Fi community group or WICO group that meets locally in different eastern cities. And I had the pleasure of getting to know some of those folks last year. I see them heavily engage in events like the Wireless LAN Professionals Conference. I understand you've been a part of that and supported that. Were you at the most recent WLPC event this year?
Yeah, I mean, for those who are familiar with the industry, WLPC is a Wireless LAN Professional Conference and happens every year in Phoenix. Keith Parsons runs it. You know, and if you're into the wireless space, it's definitely worth a journey to Phoenix. You know, it's kind of where all the hardcore wireless engineers who are operating down in the trenches networks. These are the people who are actually running and operate these networks at your big retail, healthcare, higher ed. You know, this is the people who actually keep all your KP connected to the internet.
Highly, highly recommended. I'm going to get there some year myself, but only if they hold it in the winter. I'm not going to Phoenix in the summer. So
no, February. It's usually February. Nice. Beautiful this year.
That's perfect. Well, what I see with community around Wi-Fi and the WLPC crowd really resonates with other industry stuff that I'm doing, you know, being a co-founder of the Network Automation Forum and being involved with the US Networking User Association, local network user groups. Some of the WICO folks have been critical with helping me get ready for our next NAF event, AutoCon 3 in Prague in May 2025, really helped me grill the IT provider on very specifics about the Wi-Fi setup at the venue we're going to. And that's been, you know, just people coming together and helping. Like, it's not a contract service. And we're going to try to do a WICO event in the DC area with the Virginia Network User Group later this year, probably in November. What's the cohesion in the Wi-Fi community, Bob? How are the bonds so strong? What brings those folks together?
Well, yeah, I think that I always tell people the wireless networking world is a small group of people. You know, so when you go to Phoenix, you start to meet this small group of people. I think what holds them together is a camaraderie. You know, I think that's what Keith has done at the WLPC. If you look what he's done, it's a community-driven event. It's not vendor-driven, right?
Right.
You know, the community actually votes on what they want to hear and what's get presented. So I think that is what brings that wireless team together. Is they're basically dealing with a set of problems that most people don't appreciate, right? You know, unless you're a wireless engineer trying to keep a wireless network up and running, The average person doesn't appreciate that. So I think that is the community. You know, they want to get to people who feel similar pain.
Yeah. Well, we have a very similar vibe, to use an overused term today, with Network Automation Forum. You know, there's a small community of people that are interested in network automation across many networking domains, including Wi-Fi. And I know we have some really interesting automation around Wi-Fi talks coming up for our event in May. So that's going to be exciting. But we got to find a way to get you out there sometime, Bob. Maybe in the event later this year back in the US. So, well, let's pivot to the topic of today. And, you know, AI is this huge buzzword and everybody's talking about it. Everybody has to have a story. We know that there's reality when we burn away the haze, and that you know, based on your introduction and what we know about Mist, you've done a lot over the years that's given you confidence to go down that path as a technology and driven increased confidence over time. Let's start there generally. What's building your confidence in AI delivering features for Mist today?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, when I talk to people about the adoption of AI, you know, what gives me confidence, and I think in general, most customers, you know, when I started this 10 years ago, I would say everyone was pretty much AI skeptics, mm-hmm. right? They're even some of the investors, you know, it's like this AI stuff, is it really going to happen? But if you look what's happened over the last 10 years, right, we had ChatGPT come out, mm-hmm. that pretty much eliminated a lot of skeptics. And when people say the word AI, a lot of them generate associated with Gen AI, and that's not totally true. There's more to AI than that. And the other thing I think that, I don't know, have you been in a self-driving Waymo Uber yet?
I haven't. I've missed the opportunity a couple times, but it's on my list.
Okay. What I tell people, once you go to, you know, Phoenix and you see these self-driving cars pulling out, that's another data point that, you know, this stuff is real. So I would tell you, most enterprise customers I work with now, they know AI, they've gone from being skeptics to they know AI is going to be relevant to their business. They're still struggling with trying to figure out the difference between the marketing noise and what's the difference between AI and the automation they've done in the past.
Right.
And that's what I tell people is when you look at what we're doing with AI, the difference is what we used to automate in the past used to be scripts, right? Yama, we used to write these scripts. They're very deterministic and they did the same thing day in, day out. Mm-hmm. When we work with these AI algorithms, they're much more non-deterministic. I mean, you look what we're doing with Gen AI right now. It's right. More like having a human. I've talked to people about, you know, Bob, is this AI stuff really just a stochastic parrot? Now, aren't you worried it's going to hallucinate?
Right.
You know, I don't know if you have kids or anything, Scott.
I do. Yep.
Hey, have you ever had your kids or some new employee do something that you go, what the heck were you thinking?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So these AI solutions are like a new employee or kids. Yes.
Right.
You know, you have to get to know them and trust them because they're a new form of automation.
And having the right expectations on certain tools is helpful, right? I've heard the, you know, from the software development world, I have a son-in-law who's a developer who has now figured out how to use agents like a junior developer. And he expects not all the results to be, you know, 100% accurate. And he knows how to check their work. It still gets 80% of his work done that he doesn't have to do. So I think expectations are a big part of, like, this is what I want out of a tool. I think you've gone beyond that, though, with the fine tuning that you're doing within Mist. Maybe you could talk a little bit more about that.
Well, I would say, you know, the other thing, you know, when I left Cisco, you know, I left Cisco with kind of the vision of, hey, there's an architectural change, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that we are basically, if we're going to solve real-time operations for networking, We have to build a real-time cloud architecture, and we also have to change the organization. And that was kind of the bet, right? When, you know, when I left Cisco, they're like, Bob, you're crazy. You know, Cisco, Ruby, you got these big companies. But it's really the bet that there's an architectural change. And I think the other piece of this puzzle that's giving me confidence now is at Mist, I had to tie the data science team to the support team. And that's the organizational piece of the puzzle. Hey, when you look at your customer support team, you know, here at Mist, ultimately, my customer support team is a proxy for my real customers.
Sure.
We have thousands of customers, but ultimately, your support team is responsible for supporting this whole network.
Yep.
And that was probably the other thing I've learned in this adventure was that if you're going to do AI, you really have to get your data science team tied to your domain experts. And that's another puzzle.
Well, and so let's park on that for a little bit. As a former Juniper TAC engineer of 5 years, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, I hear you. Like, you know, gathering data from, you know, router logs, switch logs, core dumps, you know, you're often feeling like you're searching for a needle in a haystack. And there's a lot of data that's noise. And your comment here of, you know, getting those TAC engineers and support people together with data scientists, what does that look like from a detail perspective?
Well, from a detail perspective, it means actually organizationally. And that's actually another reason why, you know, starting Mist, I had a blank sheet of paper.
Sure.
You know, technically, I had a blank sheet of paper to actually go build a real-time cloud architecture that I needed to process data real-time. But organizationally, it allowed me to actually tie the support team and the data science team organizationally together and actually in the same spot. Now, as we're starting to extend this kind of cloud IOPS at Juniper across switches and routers, you know, that team you used to work for, I'm working closely with that team now. The question is, how do I pull that support team that is actually in another silo and pull into my product team? Because ultimately, if you look at cloud IOPS, product and support are starting to converge, right? You're starting to have, hey, you know, I need my support team is actually part of my development team. I need these two teams working together on a daily basis to start to automate the support problems. Because the fewer support tickets my support team sees is the fewer support tickets my customer is sending me.
Sure, sure. And you know, that really resonates with me, again, from a TAC engineer perspective. The times that we had great transparency with the development team, the more effective we could be. And being able to go and look at things in the code, not check in code, because that's not what you do as a TAC engineer, but be able to see the details, right? That's super useful. So that organizational realignment, I totally support that. I think that's a great idea. I also expect that, you know, you bring data scientists in who are not domain experts, right? But they understand what it means to have high quality data. And then you know people who understand Wi-Fi and understand the Mist particulars, or they understand switching and they're going to understand what an EX does. Or you have high-end routing people and they understand, you know, what BGP is supposed to look like, you know, from a peering router perspective. Talk about that synergy between TAC engineers and other support people who are the domain experts working with the data scientists to get good data.
Well, I mean, a good example would be what we're doing right now with Zoom and Teams. I mean, so the other thing that's interestingly happening, if you look at this paradigm shift, right? You know, yes, I still have to keep all the devices green. Sure. But that doesn't guarantee, as we all know, right? Hey, this AP is green, the switch is green, and I'm still getting support tickets. What's going on?
Right.
Everything's green. You know, so the other thing is taking that application end to end. Because what I tell people, Zoom and Teams is like the canary in the coal mine.
Right.
If your network is going to have problems, it's usually going to be your video collaboration users that start to feel that pain, right? Latency and jitter. You know, so this is an example where the data science team now has built models that can accurately predict your Zoom Teams user experience. And they're starting to join that Zoom Teams data with network feature data. And so that's where the domain expert comes in. Because you have to understand what features from the wireless, the LAN, and the WAN do you want to put into that model. And then you talk about your needle in the haystack. You know, when we started this, there was a big customer that was having problems in India, right? They were getting these weird Zoom complaints. It wasn't consistent. You know, it was only certain user. When we finally got the model up and running, what we started to realize was certain users coming in from the US visiting, there was a misconfigured VPN gateway that was routing their packets to Australia. So that's kind of your needle in the haystack case, right? You know, it's not, if the signal is big enough, you know, I tell people, right? If the signal is big enough, you don't need AI. You know, the average IT person sure. will just look at the graph and go, hey, I see what's wrong. DHCP, DNS, something's broken. But it's those intermittent things where things get a little bit trickier, where it takes the time to sort out exactly all the different pieces, right? There's something over here affecting something over here, you know, two different parts of the network.
Well, and you've got two competing issues there, right? It's not just signal strength, but if the threshold for noise continues to rise, it may drown out the signal strength, right? Where, you know, we have more log info, more troubleshooting info, streaming telemetry giving us more than we've ever wanted. And more, we need something that's going to be able to find that needle. And I actually had a friend a couple of weeks ago say, it's not a needle in a haystack anymore. It's a needle in a pile of needles.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I had another case in Australia, a big retailer customer, then they were having intermittent issues on one of their sites. And the same thing, once we got the Zoom Teams model up and running, we were able to quickly figure out that there was a radar problem, right? There was some narrow band radar that we couldn't pick up in the radio, but was being picked up by the model, right? Because we could tell that, hey,
sure,
something's happening, something's associated with this channel that's causing Zoom Teams problems.
So on the focus on, you know, collab tools like Zoom and Teams, I mean, number one, it probably is the most mission critical application that most people use today. Like, we do so much remote with people. Think about how irritating it is when there's trouble, you know, with Zoom or Teams, right? You know, I'm sorry, Bob, you're cutting out. You know, could you log out and log back in? How much time is wasted in apps just like this? So this is seems like a really good canary in a coal mine / you know, default mission critical app that touches so many networks. Is anything else from an application or service perspective coming close to that for you guys today?
I think the other thing is, you know, it's always good to have end-to-end apps that know that end-to-end perspective. Zoom, Teams, Zscaler, anything that has an endpoint on the laptop is a good potential app that has a good visibility of that end-to-end experience. The other thing we've looked at, we're developing now, is Marvis Minis, which is like a synthetic user on the access point.
Okay. Right?
You know, because if I don't have Zoom Teams data, I need to find kind of that connectivity back to the application. So I think that's the next piece of the puzzle. You know, it's like we are at nighttime, right? You know, if I don't have users on the net, if I have users on the network, I have plenty of data to work with, you know, but what happens when I don't have users on the network, or I want to make sure that some application, some critical app is up and running? It's usually like a point of sale app or some mobile app that a customer wants to make sure is up and running, or some, you know, their CEO. The other critical thing is, hey, it's one thing for you and I to have a Zoom problem. It's another thing when your CEO is trying to post results for the quarter and he has a Zoom problem. That's a much more critical problem.
Not the kind of attention you want to bring to a certain presentation, right? Very good. So, by the way, you know, the use of Marvis and the similarity to Jarvis from the Marvel Cinematic Universe is not lost on me. I'm a big Iron Man, you know, Tony Stark fan. So always love that.
Now, if you're an Iron Man fan, do you remember who was the last, who was the AI assistant in the last Iron Man?
Friday?
Yes.
Yeah, very good. Very good. I was not prepared for that. And I was not going to draw any attention to that, but, you know, so how did you work that with Marvel and get that reference in there? That's hilarious.
That was a long discussion, believe me, between you know, my product management team wanted to name it something like, well, virtual network assistant. And I said, we got to give it a personality.
Sure.
You know, yeah, give it a little bit more personal than just an abbreviation.
No, I love it for sure. So personality and ease of interaction, right? This natural language interface, like, I see that being one of the most practical advantages that's impacting all sorts of network products out there. And again, you were a little bit early with that. How has that developed from a Marvis perspective?
Yeah, I think, you know, so back in 2018, I was always a big believer that natural language is going to be the next interface. You know, you look right. at networking, right? We all started our careers back with CLIs. We kind of went into dashboards, trying to make things easier. I've always been a big believer natural language is going to be the, well, I'm also a Star Trek fan, right? You know, it's like, okay. You should be able to talk to your computer, right? We should sure. get to that point. And I think that was the beginning is, yes, this is going to happen eventually. So when we started, we had a lot of good natural language understanding. We had some technology that would let us understand what you're asking us, but we really didn't have any natural generation of generating a reply. And that's what ChatGPT, you know, with Transformers and ChatGPT, that's really bringing a voice to Marvis. And when you look at Gen AI, it's doing two things. One is, yes, it's bringing these conversational interfaces to party. But that's the other big thing that's changing with Gen AI is these agentic frameworks, right? The whole programming mm-hmm. paradigm is changing from where we used to program in very deterministic linear programs. That technology is basically going to start driving us into nonlinear, non-deterministic programming. The whole software paradigm is changing. And your sure. friend, you know, I think last week, but a month ago for the WLPC, I had to write some code. And basically, I don't write Python very often, but with ChatGPT, I was able to get my little program all yep. written in a day, yep. right? We just say, hey, please give me the code for opening Excel file. Give me the code for regression models. You know, so that's an example where, you know, and it's going to start changing networking. We're going to start applying this to automating networking flows, workflows.
We'll come back on the workflow topic in a little bit, but let's talk a little bit about some of the more detailed mechanisms that you use. And I think you dropped SLA in there somewhere. And the shift from SLAs to SLEs has been an important shift in the industry, not just for Mist, but how would you compare and contrast a service level agreement with a service level expectation? How does that practically work out for yeah. how you help troubleshoot issues?
Yeah. So I mean, 20 some years ago when I did the aerospace, right? Mm-hmm. We were basically bringing data back from AP switches to a controller. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to monitor the health. What is really changing at Mist in the paradigm is really about user minutes. Now we're getting back to everything is about user minutes and keeping track of, you know, either user minutes or application minutes on the network. Now, once you get into user minutes, now I have a paradigm in which I can start to apply math to, mm-hmm. right? Because now I have all these bad user minutes, and I'm really trying to see if I can't figure out what caused these bad user minutes, right? And over here, I have a bunch of network minutes and feature minutes, right?
Right.
And so that is kind of the paradigm shift of service level experiences is, hey, we're really taking everything back to the user minute, and then we aggregate over AP, site, and org. So we always go all the way back down to the user. So sure. I basically start with every user and start tracking their experience and start aggregating up. So this lets you figure out the, hey, if you want to ask a question like, you know, why is Scott having a Zoom problem? I can go all the way down to the individual. Or I can ask a question of, you know, why is the site having a Zoom problem? Or why is the org? And that answer changes, right? As you start moving your way up, you may get slightly different answers depending on how big the space is you're looking at.
And, you know, depending on the geography of the space and the connectivity between endpoints, you know, some could be constrained to just an AP. Right. Some could just be constrained to a building. Or some problems, you know, go across the WAN and you have internet issues, that all the background work needs to be able to identify, yeah. am I having an internet problem or an AP problem or something else?
And I would tell you, when I did this, originally it was like get data to cloud and then get data into some format that I could apply some math to, right? And that's where the SLEs came from. Okay, guys, I have to get this data into some form that I can start applying math to. It turned out that customers actually appreciate the SLEs. You know, originally they were not meant for, or they're meant for Marvis. It's like, guys, I need the math. I need to get this data. So sure. Marvis can do something. But it turns out that the average IT person is their own Marvis, right? It's like, hey,
right.
If the answer is obvious, you know, the average IT person will look at the SLE and say, okay, I see the problem, you know, and I break it down into pre-connect and post-connect. Mm-hmm. You know, in the wireless world, I think Sudhir is like, you know, there's only two problems in my Wi-Fi world. Either I can't connect or it sucks.
Right.
And so that's like the post-connection, pre-connection, post-connection. Either I can't connect or I'm connected and it sucks.
That's right. You want to suck less. Absolutely.
You want less sucky minutes.
Exactly. Does that turn out to be like a metric that you use for reporting, or is it still just internal for Marvis crunching math?
No. So if you, you know, at MIST, there's whole SLEs now. There's SLEs for wireless wired routing and in terms of user experience. And this is back to a lot of customers use that as kind of as a first pass of, okay, guys, if there's something wrong there, I don't need fancy math. You know, the average human makes for pretty good AI machine.
Right, right. Maybe not the artificial part. You know, what actual intelligence, different kind of AI. So regarding bringing data to the cloud for processing, you know, this is another thing that I think we've seen attitudes change significantly on over the course of our careers. Right. You know, when this cloud thing came out, we didn't trust it. You know, we were worried about, you know, exposure and so forth. And there has been an erosion or a change in attitude of being comfortable with putting data into the cloud. You know, you have certain advantages for doing that. Like, so why do you need all that data in the cloud versus selling somebody a controller on a beefy server, you know, in their IT environment?
Yeah, I think the other details I've had customers like, hey, but can you just please take your Mist and run it in my data center?
Right.
I think the other piece of the puzzle when we started Mist was I had to solve what I call the weekly production push. Hmm. You know, so that's why I say this is cloud AI ops. I've got to get the data back to somewhere where I have plenty of compute and storage to work with and solving problems. Once you get into the data center part of the puzzle, what you find out is, you know, most of the startups miss everything, guys. I've got 20 some open source packages all up and running. I have a whole team dedicated to keep this cloud up and running. And what I tell people is the first thing you find out from moving from like 20 years ago when I did controllers, I was shipping you code on a 1U Linux box, right?
Sure.
And that code became spaghetti code. I mean, after a couple of years, that's why there were so many bugs in it. When you move to the cloud, you're really moving to a microservices architecture. And the first mistake most people make when they try to go to the cloud, they try to take their controller code, stick it in a container, and that has not changed the architecture. You've not eliminated any bugs. And so that was part of the reason I left Cisco, because that was a blank sheet of paper problem. You really have to start from scratch. I mean, you can't just take your old code and try to leverage it. You got to build that microservices foundation from scratch.
And so that obviously, you know, that change in architecture lets you scale up, scale out, right?
Well,
as a network grows.
Yep. I mean, with people who get into microservices, what they start to run is like, hey, you can take a server offline and you don't notice it, right? I'm running, I forget how many, a million different, I've got over a million some devices out there in the network. And if one of my servers goes down at Google or AWS, technically all that state gets recovered. You know, you as a customer don't feel it. If your controller goes down, you feel it.
Right. Yep. That's the cost of, if you want to run it on a single dedicated device in a single facility, you run that risk.
And that cloud solved the, you know, those two complaints I got around, you know, stop your controller from crashing and innovate more than once a year. That's not even AI. That's cloud. Basically,
right. The
cloud stops, you know, guys, you get more reliability, have fewer controller crashes, and you're innovating monthly. You're innovating weekly and monthly. We're doing software pushes every week or month.
Yeah. I mean, that shift in the industry from, you know, I need to know what version I'm running and I'll only accept, you know, a change once a year, you know, twice a year for the most aggressive shops. That's very, very typical with network infrastructure. You know, this allows that to change very easily. What about from a data analysis perspective? You know, do you, from shipping data to the cloud, does that give you the ability to spike up with resources for certain data analysis only when it's needed and shut down over time? What does that look like?
So that gets back to the support team and the development team, right? I mean, so the support team is basically telling me what data to send back to the cloud. You know, so the original game we started here was we basically said we, you know, no support person should be SSHing into an AP. And right. You're a support person at one time, right? If someone tried to take away your SSH keys, you'd probably be crying, screaming, kicking, going, how can I do my job? So that was
not a probably. It absolutely was. Yes.
Yes. Right. And so you try to take away, you know, the SSH key away from the support team. You know, you're like taking their candy away. But that is the beginnings of the getting the right data that you need to solve problems. And it's not 100%. You know, we're up to 95% of the time. Most of the data you need is in the cloud.
Sure. Well, along this the software architecture change. Route, you've also been able to go basically with an API native approach. And, you know, that's another thing that's a big change for network engineers in NetOps roles, right? Where, you know, you jokingly talked about taking away my SSH access, but kind of being addicted to the CLI via SSH has its own limitations. And moving toward an API native approach really allows a more programmatic way to do everything. How has that been important for what you've done with Marvis and more?
I think for our Fortune, like our Fortune 10, Fortune 100 customers, you know, when these large customers are at scale and they have to do deployments, they're using those APIs now to totally automate the deployment workflow, right?
Right.
I mean, they're sending kits out to hundreds of stores every week, and they do not want anyone to touch that kit. That kit goes out, those AP switches get installed, and everything is templated. That thing comes up, gets configured without any human involved. And so that is the power of the APIs for very large customers who want to automate their stuff. And I think that's why you're seeing IT go from kind of a CLI paradigm. You know, you still need people who know the CLI, but a fewer.
Sure.
You need more people who know how to program in Python and help automate workflows in the IT realm.
Yeah, I think it just makes sense for people who come from traditional network engineering backgrounds to layer on those skills and adopt those paradigms, because that's where the puck is going. We're also having trouble getting more people into the field. But lots of folks come out from a computer science background and already understand that and don't understand why I would ever log into any device and do anything. So that's like, it's a good thing to add to your tool belt.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, I go to WLPC every year. And
sure.
Every year I pitch data science as a topic, and it's starting to get the, you know, for most wireless engineers, data science is still a little far out there. That I'm starting to get more and more people voting for my data science class. So it's slowly changing.
Well, you know, the rise of the importance of high quality data, that, you know, data science seemed to be rising in tide as a career field, you know, 10 years ago, well before we were having, you know, before ChatGPT came out and exposed us all to, you know, the race for AI usage. So it's not new, but the stuff I've run into in the last few months tells me any enterprise adoption of AI related projects is going to come back to good, clean data, which means the data scientist job is still really critical. Oh. Maybe another place for people to do some skilling up.
Yeah, my other standard joke is, so I make a barrel of wine every year too. So it's, you know, it's another saying, right? You know, great wine starts with great grapes. You know,
sure.
Great AI starts with great data. And the main reason I actually built an access point at Mist, you know, it wasn't because I thought the industry needed another access point. It's because I wanted to make sure I could get the data, you know.
Right.
So, you know, while people say hardware is becoming a commodity, it's really the data is the goal, right? You still need to make sure you can get the right data from your AP switch and route that you need to solve a problem.
What does the process look like for identifying and excluding bad data from APs or from switches, firewalls, routers? How do you decide what's good and what's bad for usage in processing?
Yeah, so like you get back to that Zoom Teams example, that's more about feature relevance, right? You're bringing data back to try to predict something. And that is what things called like Shapley and Lime, you know, basically you start to find out what features are contributing to that prediction.
Sure.
So it's probably not so much as good and bad. It's more about relevant. You okay. know, what data is relevant to solving a problem or trying to predict something?
And that's where that teaming between a data scientist and a networking SME is going to help really identify the relevant data.
Yeah, relevant feature, right? I mean, you know, the data scientist may be a physicist. Actually, one of my data scientists was working on, you know, protein analysis, you know. And so he has no clue what the difference is between RSSI, signal strength, packet loss, interface. Right. All this stuff is pretty foreign. So he needs domain experts to help explain to him which features he should be looking at, you know, using in his model.
Well, between the references to wine and protein, I am now thirsty and hungry. Thanks, Bob. Thanks for that. I promised to revisit the idea of workflow. And, you know, I think there are lots of folks that have been raised up in a network operations environment where they really just don't think about workflow in formal terms. And I see a little bit of a movement. And again, with the software development influence coming into network operations and engineering, it's a concept that we really need to pay more attention to. Talk a little bit about that and your usage of workflow concepts and what you do with Marvis and in your ServiceNow integration.
Yeah, I would say now that, I mean, there's a couple things going on with workflow. One is you find out that back to the, you know, your support team is usually automating things manually, right? You're a support person, you probably had your own automation going on. Now, at the customer level, when we get to our big enterprise customers, they want to basically start to automate these workflows. Like, hey, when Marvis finds a bad cable, how's that going to get automated? That's where our partnership with like ServiceNow starts to complete the loop, right? And so when we find the bad cable, we can send a webhook message up to ServiceNow. ServiceNow can actually issue the RMA, the ticket to fix that problem. Same like with missing VLAN. Hey, we find a missing VLAN somewhere in the infrastructure. Someone has to get permission. I think that's where we are interesting at the phase of the journey right now. Most IT people will trust, you know, they'll trust Marvis, they'll trust their system to do the radio resource management, right?
Right.
But 20 years ago, they didn't trust radio resource managers, right? Like people turn that stuff off, we'll do it manually type of thing. I think we're in the same phase of for network resource management. You know, are you going to trust a virtual AI assistant to touch your data plane?
Right.
So most of our customers still want a human in the loop, right? They want that. Yeah. It's like, hey, you know, I want a real human. So they'll want that ticket to go up to ServiceNow and have a real human look at it before the config gets changed. But that's where I think we're at now.
That click OK to continue. Right.
That's basically asking permission. And you're going to see Marvis start to ask permission. It's like, okay, you know, are you going to give you're going to give Marvis permission to actually go reconfigure that missing VLAN.
Right. And like, we can think of all sorts of other examples, you know, outside of the networking domain where we started out doing things by hand, you know, keeping my books on with paper and pen. Right. I eventually moved to Excel or other accounting programs. And I totally trust that now because we know it knows how to do the math.
Well, this is my Phoenix. Go to Phoenix.
Okay.
Go get your Waymo Uber. Jump in that Waymo Uber, right? You're trusting Waymo Uber to get you from A to B now without any human in the loop.
Right. And when you have that experience, that really does build confidence in the system. For sure. But, you know, we've got smaller examples in the network domains that we just hit on here, right? You know, the radio resource management, why would you want to do that by hand today, right? There are back-end processes that can do the math. We saw an evolution in routing protocols, like from static routes to floating static routes to RIP to OSPF and BGP. Why would you want to go configure a network with floating static routes anymore and always be the one monitoring, you know, for things? It's not going to support the services that we've become used to getting from the network infrastructure.
Yeah, I think the other thing I would tell you is when you say the word AI now, It usually, you know, the question is, how do you know you're looking at AI or just machine learning or something, right? You know, what defines AI?
Right.
You know, it's usually on the thought of, you know, that self-driving car, would you call that AI? I mean, but when you look under the hood, there's a lot of things going on to get that car to self-drive for me. It's not one big algorithm.
Sure.
There's a lot of machine learning algorithm, you know, and what I tell people is what's really differentiating now from what we've done in the past are these models are getting large.
Right.
You know, look, these models are on the size of, you know, these models have 500 billion weights in them. Your brain has about 100 billion neurons in it.
Right.
You know, we're getting to a point where, you know, these models are doing interesting things compared to what we were able to do 30, 40 years ago.
And to your point, you have multiple things, multiple calculation techniques, some of which may actually be done by AI and some that might just be using other mathematical processing techniques. And it's a factor of how you get them to work together to make sure the car gets from you know, the pickup point to SFO and so forth. Well, as much as you can, what are your thoughts for impact in other networking domains? You've obviously developed a lot of expertise around this in Wi-Fi. What's coming down the road? You know, without going into a roadmap discussion, we won't hold you to any dates or features here. But for the WAN, for other pieces of the, you know, the Juniper portfolio, where's Marvis going to have its biggest impact?
Yeah, I think, you know, like you said, we started the journey on Wi-Fi, you know, wireless and Wi-Fi because we're trying to answer the question, why are you having a poor wireless experience, right? And it turns out that the access point has all the data on the wireless link, right? And it turns out that, you know, I tell people wireless is like stochastic random variables, right? When you went to college, you know, it's very problematic. Switching is much more like algebra, you know?
Right.
If that switch breaks or is broken, it's going to stay broken, right? If the port's down, the port's down. And wireless is more about, we'll wait 5 minutes and see what changes.
Right.
You know, now I would say since joining Juniper, we're starting to extend that cloud AI ops from AP to the switch to the route in the enterprise. Mm-hmm. Now the router is interesting because the router brings a lot of application data to the party, right?
Sure.
And it has visibility to that WAN link.
Yep.
So in the enterprise space, that is kind of where we're headed at Juniper now. It's starting to extend more data sources up into Marvis and the Cloud AI Ops, which lets us answer more questions. You know, now we can answer questions like, why is your Zoom Teams having a problem? I think even beyond that, we're looking to start to extend it across different business domains. You know, this is like data center. At Juniper, we have a data center business and an SP business.
Right.
And the SP business starts to get into the core router. If you look at most of our enterprise customers, usually we have an access point, a switch, and then some of the big customers have very large core routers. They almost look like service provider customers.
Sure. And you don't maintain nearly as much state or user specific details in a core router compared to, you know, what an access point would see, right? There's a lot more variability and state change there for sure.
Yeah. And once you get up to the core router, right, you've got the whole universe, right?
Right.
If that core router goes down, you probably lost your whole, then you're into redundancy. But what the core router brings is it brings great visibility into your ISP, right? Because if you look at a user experience, you know, between your client, your wireless link, your LAN link, the next big thing is usually your ISP that's going to cause some pain, right? If they get in trouble. That's the other piece of the puzzle you need to pull into Marvis.
The other two, you know, network domains that stand out to me as well that would include much more state info would be from a stateful firewall perspective and like a BNG, you know, where you have, you know, tens of thousands of subscribers terminating on an MX, for example. That's got to be another place where there might be more similarities to what's happening on an AP than in a core router.
Well, that's a whole discussion around security. And,
sure.
You know, if you look, you know, is there going to be a convergence of security and network management? Because, you know, interestingly, if you look at the data I'm using to calculate user experience, mm-hmm. it turns out that seems to be similar data for using the risk, you know, user risk score. Yep. And I think interesting, you see security is going into almost a similar misparadigm. You know, right now, most of the security guys are sending everything in the kitchen sink to Splunk.
Right.
You know, if you look at XDR, they're starting to get a little bit more selective. Hey, guys, do I need to send everything back or just send certain data sets back, which is very similar to what we're doing here to get that risk score calculated.
Well, and I think alignment and combination of networking domain info and security domain info can really help frontline operators troubleshooting problems. Is it a physical issue? Is it a security issue? Is it some of both? Right. And having access to tools that can process that information together could be super helpful.
Yeah, no, there's definitely an opportunity for efficiency between security and network management coming together, because you look at most security teams. If you're running a network, usually the security team is asking you to put a bunch of spanning ports, right? They basically want to please send all the data back to us and we will take it from there.
Right, right. Well, those are whole other topics for us to cover some other time in depth. We're going to need to start winding this down. Mm-hmm. As we go around the last bend here, is there anything else you want to call out from what Juniper's doing in the AI arena that's going to continue to give us more capability and continue to build our confidence in AI-based tooling?
Yeah, I think, you know, for those who are interested, you know, WLPC, the other big event is Mobility Field Day coming up in May.
Sure.
And that's usually where we kind of announce our latest and greatest things for the year. And I would say this year, it's been about, like I said, Marvis Minis, that data. How do we bring synthetic data into the system? The other large effort we're building is this large experience model. That's back to that Zoom Teams.
Sure.
Last year was all about trying to help customers with Zoom Teams data. This year, it's about trying to generalize that model and actually make it applicable to networks that don't have Zoom Teams data, which is very powerful, right? Where you start to sort out problems when you don't have. And then I think the other thing is really bringing Gen AI. You know, this is the other thing we're looking to invest in, is this Gen AI is going to basically, is a whole new software, as I said, software paradigm. You know, it's going to give Marvis a voice, but it's a whole new way of solving networking workflow problems.
Right. Yep. No, we all need help with that. Well, definitely check out Tech Field Day and Mobility Field Day. I've served as a delegate for Network Field Days in the past. I was just out a few weeks ago for Network Field Day 37. So, and if you can't watch them live, they are recorded online. So if you can't catch Bob and his colleagues at the next one, you can always watch the recording. Now, for network operators, I don't let people get away without answering some fun questions. And you can take great liberty in how you answer these, because you're not in a NetOps role, obviously, Bob. But two questions. One, in the day, if you were a person that had to support maintenance windows, you know, 2 to 4 in the morning, Saturday night, Sunday morning, what was the music on those maintenance windows that kept you going?
Well, now, see, so the other thing is I started learning the guitar when I was about 60. So
there you go. Okay.
It's got to be Creedence Clearwater, Eagles, and see what would be my other, and Dead.
Gotcha. We have a range of answers on this. And so you're not the first for some of those artists, but I would enjoy all those as well. No question. I have a couple guitars here in the office. They have too much dust on them, unfortunately.
Yeah,
so don't stop. Keep playing.
If you're a kid, it's one of those sports to learn when you're young. So
that's right. Exactly. And then on the other big question we ask is, you know, if you do this long enough, you've caused an outage. Is there an outage that you'd like to own up to today? And if you can't or don't want to, what's the most interesting outage you've ever seen? And how did it get resolved?
Yeah, as you said, I have not I've been involved here in cloud outages, running a SaaS company.
Sure.
And I think the most interesting one I have had to deal with is I'm trying to think about what cloud is probably the most interesting thing I've had to deal with at my role right now is when the cloud goes down.
Sure.
Yeah. We get so dependent
on it. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And I think probably the other thing is the internet, right? I mean, problems, most people like, as you say, the cloud, but you've got to keep your internet. If your internet goes down, you have problems in your business.
For sure. Well, what else should we be talking about from an ops perspective? You have any big nugget or nuggets you want to leave folks that they should like really go and skill up on?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as we're at that phase right now where you should make sure you're definitely up to speed on Gen AI and where these agent frameworks are going to go. I think as an industry, we're all in the same place. It's all relatively new on the framework. You should definitely get your head wrapped around AI and the difference between AI automation and what we've done in the past. And mm-hmm. I think that's the other thing most customers and people are trying to understand is, why is AI so much different than what I did 30 years ago? So those are probably the two things. You know, understand enough about AI that you can answer the question, what's different? And then Gen AI is going to be another trend that's going to be coming our way the next couple of years.
And, you know, we've kind of built all this network plumbing that lets us go and learn on any of those topics, right? There's nothing holding any of us back from, you know, going and diving in on these things.
I can turn anyone into a data science in 3 days. Now it's okay. Like, you go to YouTube.
Challenge accepted.
If you want to actually write a piece of Python code nowadays, between ChatGPT and YouTube, you can go get a model up and running in about 3 days.
For sure. Right. Well, and you know, with these tutors that have endless patience, right? Marvis isn't going to bark at you if you ask the same question 72 times, right? And none of these other generative AI tools are going to, you know, discourage you from, you know, Scott, that was a stupid question. You've asked it 5 different ways. It'll never do that. So
that's a whole episode on education. Yeah.
For sure.
I would have people learn, and I would say, 30 years ago, if you come to my, I have a whole library when I was becoming a wireless engineer. I bought every book I could find on wireless at the Stanford Library. Nowadays, when I want to learn something, I go to YouTube. I don't buy a book. I'm basically on YouTube learning something.
I'm with you. Like, and I pay for YouTube Premium just so I can get it'll play when the screen's off and I can listen to it while I walk. Yeah. Right. And go, like, if I need a 10-minute video on something, that is my go-to. We're definitely aligned on that. Well, Bob, thanks so much for being here today. Real pleasure getting to speak with you and know you a little better. Where can folks contact you? Is there anything specific you want to point people to for the work that you're doing?
Usually LinkedIn is the next best way. You know, I'm always happy to talk about cloud AOps, indoor location, wine, any of that stuff. Just find me on LinkedIn. Feel free to connect.
Very good. Well, thanks again for coming on Total Network Operations. This is a critical topic for any network engineer to understand, and you've really helped us with more than a great start. Thank you to the rest of you for tuning in to Total Network Operations. We'd love your feedback. If you have important things to say about NetOps, you want to hear what's coming, contact me via DM on LinkedIn or send us a follow-up at packetpushers.net/follow-up, or you can fill out the contact form at tnops.com. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on Total Network Operations.